A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations. Today, we'll hear about a project that will digitize many of the programs, scrapbooks, recordings, and other holdings in the Marian Anderson Collection at Penn Libraries in Philadelphia. I'll speak with David McKnight, director of the Rare Book and Manuscript Library and curator of manuscripts of the Kissock Center for Special Collections, Rare Books and Manuscripts, and Liza Vick, head of Penn Library's Otto E. Albrecht Music Library and Eugene Ormandy Music and Media Center. We'll talk about what the collection includes and how they reflect Marian Anderson's legacy. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Michael Tree, founding violist of the Guarneri String Quartet, has passed away at the age of 84. A native of Newark, New Jersey, Tree graduated from the Curtis Institute of Music, where he studied violin and viola with Ephraim Zimbalist. Tree formed the Guarneri Quartet with fellow musicians from Marlborough Music Festival in 1964, and the ensemble continued to perform until 2009, having changed just one member during its existence. Tree was the son of Samuel Applebaum, whose instruction books on string technique continue to educate string players to this day. According to the Washington Post, Tree had Parkinson's disease. Lincoln Center has announced the resignation of President and CEO Deborah Spar, who had served in the post for just about 1 year. In the statement from Lincoln Center, Spar cited a desire to return to her academic pursuits. Spar had previously served as president of Barnard College. Lincoln Center said it has appointed Russell Grenat, who was most recently executive director of Lincoln Center Education, as acting president. Spar succeeded previous president Jed Bernstein, who resigned after about 2.5 years in the post, following a relationship with a staff member. Lincoln Center said it would begin a formal search for Spar's replacement in the coming weeks. Opera Theatre of St. Louis has named Andrew Jorgensen as its general director, succeeding Timothy O'Leary. Jorgensen is currently director of artistic planning and operations at Washington National Opera at the Kennedy Center. O'Leary is departing St. Louis in July in order to take on the role of general director at Washington National Opera. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. The voice of Marian Anderson resonates not just with beauty, but with a proud and historic legacy. She made history as the first African-American woman to sing a leading role at the Metropolitan Opera in 1955, and about 16 years earlier, a refusal by the Daughters of the American Revolution to allow her to perform before an integrated audience at Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C., led to a publicly acclaimed outdoor concert on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, organized by First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. Those were just two of the many moments in Anderson's life that reflected her pioneering role. Many more of them are captured in the Marian Anderson papers housed at the Kissock Center for Special Collections, Rare Books, and Manuscripts, part of Penn Libraries in Philadelphia. Penn Libraries recently received funding from the Council on Library and Information Resources to digitize portions of this collection and others through the Digitizing Hidden Special Collections and Archives program. The Anderson collection includes coaching notes, programs, jokes, recipes, fan letters, tour itineraries, and scrapbooks, as well as audio recordings. You just heard an excerpt from one of those recordings, with Anderson singing Jan Sibelius's Vardette and Drôme. I had the chance to speak recently with two of the three principal investigators on the grant, David McKnight, head of the Rare Books and Manuscript Library and curator of manuscripts at the Kissock Center, and Liza Vick, head of Penn Library's Otto E. Albrecht Music Library and Eugene Ormandy Music and Media Center, both of whom worked along with Richard Griscom, Associate University Librarian for Collections and Liaison Services. McKnight said that this effort is the latest in a series of projects to make the collection, which consists of more than 500 boxes of materials, more accessible to researchers and the broader public.
Marian Anderson was a very methodical keeper of her legacy. and through her archive. And given its significance and given her importance in Philadelphia, and given the fact that in approximately 2000, one of my former staff members, who is no longer here, the then curator of manuscripts, her name was Nancy Shawcross. Nancy initiated a project to digitize over 4,000 Marian Anderson photographs. And so we had already begun the process of making the archive accessible to a wide audience. And the collection itself, as I mentioned, is very large, very diverse, documents Marian Anderson from her birth, right through to her death, almost a century's worth of materials. And what we wanted to do was extend access to the archive, because Penn already, University of Pennsylvania, has already digitized 5,000 medieval manuscripts and other kinds of open public domain materials. And although the Marian Anderson materials are under copyright, or some of the materials are technically under copyright, we do have permission to extend access through digitization to the collection. So given her importance in Philadelphia, given the fact that she will be on the $5 bill, I believe, in several years, and given the fact that there is an enormous interest in her legacy, almost on a weekly basis, I receive queries from researchers and so on and so forth regarding the archive and access to the archive. There is an American Masters film in production. There are three women who are producing a Hamilton-like a musical based on the life of Marian Anderson. And in fact, recently we had a researcher from France who's writing a biography of Anderson in French. So enormous interest, and through the digital, through digitization and online access, we can provide access to a good portion of the archive for researchers who may live in Australia, France, Tacoma, Washington, or here in Philadelphia or New Jersey. So based on that, we came up with a priorities list, which includes all of her programs from 1916 to 1965. We're going to put online her notebooks and diaries, scrapbooks, and we're also going to digitize about 200 hours of her non-commercial recordings. So I think with that material online, this will give researchers an enormous amount of information and of research value, especially the programs, which provide a geographical portrait of her global performances, the repertoire that she performed. And so I think that's ultimately the goal, identifying research materials of value that can be shared through the internet, through digitization. And our application successful, and therefore we will proceed with that project.
I was wondering if we could dig a little bit deeper into that looking ahead. Once these are digitized, who are some of the people that you see really being able to take advantage of that access, and what are some of the specific interests that you think will be able to be explored?
Well, for example, we do have queries from researchers regarding her repertoire. What did she perform in 1933 in Stockholm, Sweden? Or where was she in 1925 in the American South, and where was she performing? So this is particularly relevant for, let's say, the study of Marian Anderson from the perspective of the color line and where that is drawn. So one could draw, with the programs online, one could then do some analysis. We're going to be providing data so that ultimately researchers will be able to download a data set and do some analysis, put it into a mapping program, Google Maps, for example, and get a sense of visualize the extent of her performances. We've already done this in a kind of exploratory way, and it's quite amazing when you look at all the dots on a global map of where Marian Anderson performed. We can dig a little deeper through the notebooks and diaries into her responses and reactions to contemporary life on the road of a performer. She was, again, as I mentioned, she was quite methodical about keeping notes. We also have, interestingly, in those diaries and notebooks, her recipes. She loved to cook on the road, and that's partly as a result of the color line. Again, when she was visiting a particular town, and she was directed towards the colored hotel versus the, where the white performers might stay, she brought her pots and pans along with her so that she could do some cooking. But she did love to cook in general. So we'll be able to reveal some of these more personal elements in her life as on the road and her favorite recipes and so on and so forth. Among the other materials that we're including in the digitization project are the interviews that were she recorded with Howard Taubman in the 1940s and which resulted in her autobiography called My Lord, What a Morning. And scholars have been itching to get access to the transcripts of the interviews because Taubman was going to ghostwrite the autobiography for Marion based on the interviews. So we're going to make those available for the first time publicly. So that will shed some insights into what she expressed in terms of her audio recollections and the transcripts and what actually was published in the autobiography.
Well, obviously not everything can be digitized, but what else aside, what are some of the other items that make up the collection?
Interestingly, the two other major portions of the collection of the broadly speaking Marian Anderson archive includes her collection of printed music and manuscript music. There are approximately 2,500 pieces of music. But because of copyright, we're unable to put these online at the present time. And we do, you asked earlier about researchers and what their interests are. It's not uncommon for me to receive a request from a performer who's interested in performing. He or she will discover through our online catalog that Marian Anderson's the sheet music collection includes something by X. And as a result of that, we are unable to put these things online. I can provide a service copy for an individual to perhaps practice with, but it's the responsibility of the individual to get the copyright permission to perform a work. So dealing with that large conundrum of copyright and this massive archive of sheet music, which she collected over the course of her career. The sheet music itself is a remarkable resource, but unfortunately, the limitations of copyright make it impossible for us at this time to put it online without repercussions. The other component I should add here is the correspondence. Again, for a similar reason, copyright and correspondence don't always jive. So it would be impossible for us to put her vast correspondence online. She received a lot of fan mail. Although she was an active correspondent, she received lots and lots of fan mail over the years. And in fact, some of her fans contributed to sent her scrapbooks, which are kind of interesting as an aside. But with correspondence like the sheet music, it's all under copyright. And the terms of the grant that we have received from the Council on Library and Information Resources places on the University of Pennsylvania, as with any other institution that received an award, a guarantee that the materials are in the public domain and can be put online. So we don't have an army of copyright specialists who can contact in certain cases, it would be impossible to locate some of the correspondents. They might be dead and so on and so forth. So what we did, in essence, was really focus on materials, A, that we had control over with regard to putting them online, like the programs and the notebooks and scrapbooks and diaries, and to avoid any other kinds of problems. So that's really what we wanted to do, is focus on the materials that could be readily put online.
Once this project is complete, how will people be able to access this?
We're at the University of Pennsylvania. We are going to make the materials available through our library website. We're going to create something called the Marian Anderson Study Portal. The materials will be, without going into technical details, the web page will enable a user to do searches and browse materials, and it'll all be delivered through a single interface. I should also mention that we're partnering and collaborating with a project out of the University of Minnesota Library, which is called Umbra, which is an aggregator for African-American digitized content. They're not housing the content, but they're creating links to projects like ours at Penn and other projects that have emerged in other university and archival settings around the United States. So in terms of exposure, Umbra will be very important to us as well. But the goal is to create a single web page gateway into the materials. And at the same time, we will bring into the fold the over 4,000 photographs that are online and other materials that we have developed over the last few years related to Marian Anderson. Mm. I should also mention that we have the papers of her nephew, James DePriest. James DePriest was the son of Marian's sister, Ethel. He died several years ago, and we have his papers. And among his papers, we do have some additional information, particularly about the land leases for the Martin Street Anderson home, which have been proven to be very important for scholars to learn a little bit more about the origins of the Anderson family in Philadelphia. And among the other things that we have salvaged from the archives, so to speak, is a beautiful portrait that was done in 1942, oil portrait by the African-American artist R.S. Pius. And I also have salvaged and saved her Mariana Farm sign. She and her husband lived in Connecticut on the farm when she wasn't touring. So there's a whole vast array of materials that are part and parcel of the Marian Anderson archive. For the University of Pennsylvania, we're very honored to have the papers. We hope that through the digitization project, we will be able to assist in what I think is a really important project, which is to ensure that the memory and legacy of Marian Anderson is remembered and valued. Unfortunately, there seems to be a memory loss about her, particularly locally here in Philadelphia. You ask somebody about Marian Anderson, oh, yeah, I think I know who you're referring to. So we see ourselves as proactive in promoting the life and career of Marian Anderson in an important way at an important time, as there is increasingly international interest. I have to tell you, when we were visited a couple of years ago by two young fellows from Australia who were planning a movie about her, I was, as they say, gobsmacked, because obviously she resonates, you know, 15,000 miles away. Would like to see that kind of energy reflected locally as well.
Well, looking specifically at some of the music collections, what already has been made available online that music lovers might be interested in perusing?
In terms of Philadelphia and the Philadelphia sound of the Philadelphia Symphony Orchestra, we have the papers of Leopold Stokowski. Those are the papers that survived. Unfortunately, much of his archive went overboard when they were being shipped back to England when he moved to England in, I think, the 1960s. Not much of the Stokowski material has been digitized, but it's of enormous interest to researchers, partially because, again, of copyright issues. Scholars are particularly interested in researching and having access. I wish we could do this, but we can't because of copyright access to some of his marked up scores, particularly of Bach and so on. We do, however, have the famous podium that was used in the film Fantasia, and we also have the jacket that Stokowski wore So that's kind of neat, having those two objects. But where we have been able to do a little more digitization with the cooperation of the family are the Eugene Ormandy papers. We have digitized the Eugene Ormandy photographs, like the Mary Anderson photographs. So that's, again, another great resource and made accessible, even more accessible through indexing and providing names and so on. And we also acquired a few years ago a collection of Ormandy 8mm films, which we've also digitized and put online. So if your listeners go to Google and type in Ormandy 8mm movies or movies, home movies, they would be directed to the website where they can actually view this material. Ormandy photographs, UPenn, Marian Anderson photographs, UPenn. And that's one of the quick ways that you're able to get access to that material. I also mentioned the James DePriest papers, and we acquired those over a number of years. James DePriest, as I mentioned, was Marian Anderson's nephew. He's a Wharton graduate and has a BA in music from Penn. And we haven't really been able to do very much with his papers. Another important figure is Ray Livingston, who was a Penn grad. And Ray Livingston, among other things, went to Hollywood and made been writing songs like Que Sera Sera and Silver Bells and so on and so forth. So we do have popular music archives as well. But in terms of the symphony orchestra, the key papers are the Ormandy and Stokowski.
That was David McKnight, director of the Rare Book and Manuscript Library and curator of manuscripts of the Kissock Center for Special Collections, Rare Books and Manuscripts at Penn Libraries. Liza Vick said that digitizing more of the papers also reflects Anderson's wish to make them more available to the public.
It was a special wish of Marian Anderson that her library be made available to students of music and to the Philadelphia community that she was close to. Penn does quite a lot of outreach with K through 12 students in West Philadelphia who will also have access to these materials both online and at the Kislak Center, which is open to visitors.
Are there already programs that provides that type of access, particularly to younger students? Or is this something that this will really allow?
The outreach program has been going on for many years, and they have had access to these collections on site since the collection arrived. Classes visit fairly regularly, and the Kislak Center provides tours and orientations and show and tells of the material that I often help with, and so the digitization will be the key added value, make it easier for them to access and increase access nationwide. Just Marian Anderson, during the time that she was alive, was just incredibly famous. There's correspondence in the collection from all sorts of people. She was friends with Albert Einstein, for example, and so there's just a tremendous amount of material. She was also a very a reserved and private person, so the scrapbooks and notebooks in particular, I think, give a window into her touring life as well as her professional life.
What are some of the ways that the collection illustrates the role that she played both within the broader musical world, but also specifically looking at the context of the civil rights era and the challenges she was facing?
So I'll just outline a few career highlights of hers. Her career spanned the mid-1920s to the mid-60s, and she was born in 1897 and died in 1993. And her career was jump-started when she won a voice competition in New York in 1925 against more than 300 other singers, and the prize was a performance with the New York Philharmonic in Lewisohn Stadium in 1925 that gave her national exposure and great reviews. She then went to Europe to strengthen her languages, and she eventually toured the globe, including Asia, Europe, and South America. And she was particularly welcomed in Scandinavia, where there was a bit less discrimination. And A few of the other highlights that are reflected in the sound clips include her Lincoln Memorial performance. At one point, her manager, Saul Yurok, approached the Daughters of the American Revolution after she had toured extensively in the U.S., including the South. He approached them to invite her to perform at Constitution Hall in D.C., which they refused, and Eleanor Roosevelt resigned from the DAR in protest. And as a result, the Secretary of the Interior invited her to perform at the Lincoln Memorial on Easter Sunday, 1939. She performed before 75,000 people, and it was broadcast to millions of people. And an audio clip from that is featured in our digital exhibit. Hmm. And in 1939, she received the Springhorn Medal from the NAACP. She also was the first African-American to sing at the Metropolitan Opera. And she performed the role of Ulrika in Verdi's Un Ballo in Maschera in 1955. And although she only performed there once, she paved the way for other singers like Leontine Price and Jesse Norman and other artists. Later that year, she toured Israel. She performed at Eisenhower's inauguration in 1957 and later toured Asia. A documentary of that trip was filmed and produced by Fred Friendly and Edward Murrow of CBS for a television series called See It Now. And we also have some clips online from that. She also performed for JFK's inauguration in 1961 and received the Presidential Medal of Freedom a few days after his assassination in 1963. And she did loads of charitable work and won many, many awards.
I understand that there will actually be a symposium devoted to Marian Anderson coming up in the fall. What will be some of the themes and issues covered as part of that?
So the symposium is planned for October 26th and 27th, 2018, and we have not actually invited speakers just yet, so I can't share a list right now, but what we hope to do is the title will be Sound, Gender, and the Color Lines, and Professor of Music Guthrie Ramsey is a key organizer, and we will be inviting several scholars and performers to be determined, and we also hope to work closely with the Penn Composition Department and present speakers and hopefully some performance.
That was Liza Vick, head of Penn Libraries, Otto E. Albrecht Music Library, and Eugene Ormandy Music and Media Center. More information can be found at library.upenn.edu/kislak and library.upenn.edu/music. I hope you enjoy these conversations about the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world that I bring you each week on A Tempo. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.